So the way the Ben Noach goes about this is he must consult the other areas of the Torah, which are not part of the seven laws, but where there are laws which convey philosophical ideas. Now, therefore, Ben Noach, every human being is supposed to be treated with respect, and you are not permitted to desecrate the body of a human being by consuming him, which would be a form of desecration of the human body. Okay, a human being. Now, if you're in the Andes, okay, and you're starving, so there are two reasons why you should consume the dead person. First of all, the only reason you're not permitted to do it is because of the fact that a human being reflects the image, is has a certain divinity to him, and therefore you're not permitted to desecrate his body. But if you will die, if a living person who actively reflects a divine image, if he would die, that would be a far worse desecration of man than the dead person. The dead person is being used. See, again, here we're not in taboo. In the taboo framework, we say, hey, how could you desecrate the dead? The primitive tribes have these things with the dead, these taboos about the dead. And there it would be perfectly logical for them, based on their taboo system, to die rather than to desecrate the dead, like that's the worst thing in the world. But Torah is a rational system. And God gave us a system which makes sense and which is logical. And the logical system is, on the contrary, if a dead person who is not really alive anymore deserves respect, how much more so does a live person deserve respect? Now, if you let a live person die because of a dead person, you're giving respect to a dead person, and you're not giving any respect to the person who's alive. So, on the contrary, you're distorting the whole approach to the problem. You're distorting the problem rather than viewing it intelligently. The intelligent way to look at it would be that a person who is alive is far more a reflection of the Creator than a dead person, because he's alive. This other person is dead; it's just his body remains. His soul is gone. But we respect body because the body was associated with the soul. So therefore, it's by way of association we respect the dead, but not because. We don't say the higher level than the living. That's an absurdity. So therefore, to allow a person who is alive to die because of the dead would be a desecration of the concept of respecting man. That would be just the opposite. So based upon the very concept of respect of the dead, it is appropriate for the person who is alive to remain alive and to consume the cadaver if necessary to sustain his life. Again, in the halachic system, I'm sure you're all familiar with the fact that human life comes before, takes priority before any of the commands except three. But for instance, eating pork or even desecration of the Sabbath. You know very well, I'm sure you've heard of people who are Orthodox Jews, and if a woman is pregnant and she's about to deliver, and she has to deliver on the Sabbath, she is permitted to have her husband drive the car to the hospital, which is, of course, on the Sabbath, a major violation. But she's not only permitted, she's obligated to do so. As a matter of fact, it goes so far that if a person has a doctor that they feel is better than another doctor, and both doctors are available to them, the doctor that they feel is better is 100 miles away, and the doctor that is a good doctor but just not as good in the patient's mind is only around the block, you are permitted to drive the 100 miles, even though you're breaking the Sabbath every time you're driving, every time you step on the gas pedal. But life comes before takes priority over the Sabbath. And when we say life takes priority, it means to say even so far as getting a doctor that you think is the best doctor. That's how far it goes. So if the desecration of the Sabbath, which in the 613 system is the worst thing that a person can do, permissible in order to save your life, certainly to consume a cadaver, which is not a major, is not as major as the Sabbath, is certainly permissible. And if it's permissible, it's not just permissible, it's obligatory, because you have a responsibility to maintain your life, the life that God has given you. That's your obligation. You'll notice in Deuteronomy, Moses always, when he warns the people, he says, guard yourself and guard your souls very much. And this means that every person has an obligation to guard his life. God gave man life. That's something divine. You have an obligation to guard it. And therefore, that takes priority over other violations. And therefore, in the case of the Andes, on two counts, you would be obligated to consume the cadaver in order to maintain your life. And if you did so, as horrible as it might seem to you, as disgusting and unappealing as it may be, you are fulfilling God's commandment in a great way. You are doing the right thing. And the person shouldn't have any guilt. The person should feel triumphant and feel that they were able to overcome their emotions and comply with God's will. That's exactly what the Torah is all about, to comply with God's will in the situation where your emotions go against what the Torah tells you for any reason. It may even be a fine reason on your part. I've read one time, I'm a camper, and I one time saw this book, I spent my books on, I saw this book that says, How to Stay Alive in the Woods. And on the cover, the gentleman who wrote the book promised that he will guarantee that no matter where you are lost in the woods, you can always stay alive. So it caught my attention, and I purchased the book, because I used to do a lot of hiking in the backwoods, and I purchased the book, and I got about 4 or 5 pages into the book, and the man fulfilled his promise. He showed how simply it is to stay alive in the woods. He said, if you eat insects, if you eat grubs, and if you eat anything that, no matter how disgusting, you will stay alive. There's no way that you will die if you can just overcome that disgust that you have for consuming certain objects, certain animals and certain creatures and certain life forms. So the the man delivered. He was right. He was 100% right. And he stated there that many people have died simply because they were too disgusted and they couldn't overcome that emotion and they lost their lives. Now, this, in the eyes of the Torah, is senseless. A person shouldn't be... That is when a person lives under a taboo kind of system. So then things and the emotions take over. But in the Torah system, God wants knowledge, wisdom, understanding to be in control. And if you have to consume something that's no matter how disgusting it might be, if this is for the right purpose, if this is the correct thing in the Torah's eyes, you should be proud of yourself that you overcame your emotion and you did it. You shouldn't feel guilty as the survivors in the Andes did. You should feel, as I said before, triumphant. You should feel great because I was able to do what God wants me to do. And how fortunate I am that I have the Torah as a guide to tell me what to do in every situation, to know precisely what God's will is. And you should feel elated and happy that you have the proper information and that you're able to control your emotions. Your emotions are under the guidance of your mind, your understanding, and which God gave you. That is the true attitude of the Ben Noach. So that's why, as I said, from studying when we study these laws about what is prohibited and what is not, we consider ourselves very fortunate that we have a guide that tells us precisely what to do under any circumstance. And it is amazing how the Torah covers every possible circumstance. And in the unusual case, a particular circumstance is not there, we simply go back to the sources, which are enormous, and we draw logical conclusions from those sources as to what one should do in the new case, the unusual new case, which is not to be found in the case laws of the Torah. So we are fortunate that we have such a system. But I wish to emphasize and reemphasize the fact that it is not a taboo system. Other religions have taboos. We don't have taboo. We have Torah. And Torah is based upon knowledge and understanding. Okay, if there's any questions at this point, I'll be glad to take them. I just didn't want to leave that Andes episode, without without explaining it more fully, because I think it's an excellent example of how the religious Christian, and these were religious Christians, how the religious Christian would approach the situation, and the Ben Noach, the Torah personality. And when I say Ben Noach, of course, I mean Ben Israel, Ben Noach, because we're all under the same system, and it's just a question of what's mandatory, but we all live by the same ideas, principles, and halachic system. So the difference is a dramatic one in this particular incident between the two different approaches, and I think it's excellent for people who have gone
Rabbi,
this far.
Rabbi,
to be able to see. Yes, go ahead.
Charles Gangers, he's got a question.
Okay, sure.
How you doing?
Oh, good. Thank you.
My question is, and I don't really have a specific here, so it may be hard to answer, but you start searching for an answer of a question you have, because what we have to read here is the Torah and the writings. And so let's say I guess what I'm looking for is a foundation of looking for any answer. What should be the basis that if you have a question of, say, in today's economy that we're trying to search for, and it doesn't have to be necessarily monetary or anything like that, so I'm not trying to refer just to something to, you know, whether to make money or not. I'm just saying anything that,
right.
Where would you start? Where?
Okay.
How do you approach finding an answer to a question? What should be the sources, A, B, C, that you would refer or the guidance to go to that?
Okay. Good question. That's a good question. Your question takes in more, covers more than at first, you know, than it would seem at first sight. So let me just elaborate a little bit. With regard to the monetary areas, the Torah is profound and proficient and broad and expansive insofar as the laws, the monetary laws. They are so specific and detailed. There is an entire gigantic volume which serves as the basis of all questions of monetary law. Okay? The Shulchan Aruch is a compilation. Of course, it's all from the Talmud and from the source of the oral law. But in order to make it simple, they compiled it into, they compiled the Shulchan Aruch into several volumes that deal with different areas. One of the areas is the monetary area. There is not a situation that you cannot find in that source. And again, there may be, and things that are new, you know, I mean, there are mortgages. There are some, like, as a matter of fact, my son, going to Cardozo Law School, and, you know, he's a student of the Talmud for years and years, and he just told me a few weeks ago, he said, I can't believe American law did not take care of this problem until 100 years ago when it arose, because they had a certain situation. He says, it's in the Talmud 2,000 years ago that those cases were already discussed. And I'm sorry, I don't recollect the exact case at this point, but if you're interested, I'll ask him, because it was a week or two ago, and I just slipped my mind. But you have no idea how expansive and how much the system covers, just about every possible case, loans, mortgages, interest rates, every possibility is covered in detail, and liens on properties, and you can't imagine how advanced it is. It is far, far superior intellectually than any system that we have in this country, okay, in spite of the greatest minds we have working on the legal system, all right? So there is no such thing as a question that you cannot, that isn't mentioned in the system. There might be, as I said, there might be occasionally a rare case where the specific case is not there. I say it is extremely, extremely rare. Then what you have to do is you have to consult a scholar who understands the theories behind all these laws, will immediately be able to show you where that case is going to fall in based upon his theoretical knowledge. All right? He may have to think about it. It may not be immediate. He may have to think about it. And that's exactly what response is, and that's why you have an ongoing process of responsa. But now let me get to your general question. The general question is also, and a very, very important one, the question is, how do I, when I have a question, what do I do? I mean, who do I consult? Where do I look? Do I take out the Bible? Do I take out Talmud? What do I do? Okay? Now, the answer, again, God gave us a very rational system. And the answers are logical and complete and simple to follow and to understand. All right? The answer is, it depends on your level of knowledge. Okay? Now, what I mean is like this. If you are a Talmudic scholar, okay, and you have a question, then what you do is you consult the works, which are the written law and the oral law, which explains it, and you consult those works, and you find your answer. Okay? Now, if you are not a scholar, what do you do then? You're not familiar with the volumes of works that people spend their lifetimes studying. So what do you do? Or you don't have to be a Ben Israel. Not every Ben Israel knows the Torah. Okay? They're a plain businessman. He doesn't spend his days and his nights poring over volumes of Talmud. So he's a plain man. You know, he's a fine, upstanding man, but he's not a great scholar. What does he do? The answer is, what you do is, you have the right to choose for yourself any authentic scholar that you feel is qualified to give you the best answer. And you have a right to say, I trust this person. He is a scholar. You have to make sure that he's an authentic scholar. You can't just say, I trust this man because he has a great personality or because he's such a nice man and he calls him by. That is not enough. He must be an authentic scholar. Authentic scholar means that he has, in today's world, we don't have any real ordination, but the reason why we give ordination today is as an indication, which would that the person has the knowledge. So he should be an individual that is ordained by one of the yeshivos, the seminaries of Torah study that are recognized among those who keep the 613 mitzvahs, the 613 commandments, the Orthodox Jews. So anyone who has that qualification, you have a right to choose from among any of those and say, I will follow this person. And what I will ask my question to him. I will always, I go by his judgment. You have a right to do that. Now, there is an intermediary case. There is a case where a person may have a level of knowledge, and he may have two scholars that he feels have more knowledge than him, and he might go and raise the question, and he might have a question, and he may find that one scholar says one way, another scholar says another way. Now, what does he do in that situation where he's confronted with two scholars, both authentic scholars? One says A, one says B. What does the person do? Now, if the person has no knowledge, has zero knowledge, so then we say that he should go to there are options over here, and I don't want to make it too confusing because it's not really difficult. It's just there are different cases, and Torah does take some kind of intellectual apprehension, so you have to follow along with me a little bit. But if you listen carefully, I don't think you have any problem understanding it. You have a right, either in that case where you have this argument, this debate. One says A, one says B. What do I do? So, again, you have a right, if you wish, to always follow one scholar. Just like a person has a right to say, well, this is my physician, this is my doctor. That's a rational thing to do. That makes sense. A person has a right to say, I rely on what he says. That is a rational thing. Same thing over here. You have a right to say, this is my rabbi, this is my scholar, I follow whatever he says. And in most synagogues, what happens when the synagogue takes a rabbi, the understanding is that they're going to follow his opinion. Now, there may be many arguments, but they are deferring to his opinion. That is one method. There is another method, however, also. You don't have to always say, I trust this person implicitly with everything he says. You have a right to say, I don't know, I trust him, he has knowledge, but over here I'm not sure, because this other guy has knowledge too. Why should I follow this one? So then, you could either, if it's a question of a Torah law, you're supposed to go to the side that is safe. In other words, one says you're not allowed to do it, the other one says you can, so you should play it safe, because you don't know. So just like in medicine, if one doctor said, look, if you do this, you're going to get cancer, the other one says, well, you say, well, look, I don't know, I'll play it safe. The same thing is true with regard to the Torah law. Or, now here's another case, if you are a scholar yourself, even though these two people have more knowledge than you, you have a right to say, look, I hear what each one is saying. I'm going to go through the area myself. And if you are on a level of scholarship where you're capable of doing this, you have a right to go through the area. And if you understand it, either in the way of A or in the way of B, you have a right to follow that way. If you're qualified to do so, if you've reached a level of expertise where you're capable of analyzing the Torah and the oral law, if you're capable of doing that, then you have a right, even though these people may be greater than you, say, look, I'm going through this area myself. My mind tells me that this guy is right. A is right. I'm going to follow this. So that is another possibility. But every possibility that I've given you is a logical, rational possibility, and it's exactly what a rational person would do in any area of knowledge where it pertained to his life. He would follow one of those options, okay? You have the choice. The choice is yours. Torah, as you know, gives man, it wants you to think, it wants you to make a decision. God wants us to make decisions, and he wants us to make logical, clear decisions. That's the important thing. So you have several options. It depends, of course, as I said before, on your own level of knowledge. If a person is a Ben Noach and he feels he doesn't have any knowledge, then he must take an expert. But if a Ben Noach continues to study Torah to the point where he becomes really proficient in his knowledge, then he's in a different situation, and he has a right he finds himself in a situation where he could look up himself the law. He's capable of looking up the law himself, because he knows exactly where to go and how to go about it. Okay, that's a different level. It depends on the person's level. That's the key. But on each level, there is a logical solution the way the person should follow. The person has to be consistent, though. That's important. In other words, you can't say, this is my scholar. I always follow what he says. I rely on him. Let him worry about the problems. He'll go through all the opinions. Whatever he says, I rely on him. That is correct. That's authentic. But then if he says something you don't like, you can't say, hey, this time I think I'll follow the other guy because I like what he says. That is inconsistent. That is not rational. Then you're just catering to your emotion because you establish this man as your authority. That's okay. But now you don't like something he says. You say, hey, I'm going to jump over to another authority. That is not consistent. That you cannot do. That's one thing you cannot do because you've got to be consistent and logical in your approach. Okay? Did I answer? If there are certain loose threads, let me know.
He said you've done a very adequate job on that.
Oh, thank you. Okay, we have, I believe we have like a few minutes left, so my watch is correct.
About four.
Four. Okay, anybody have any other questions?
Anybody?
Don't hesitate to speak up.
We got one coming.
Okay, good.
Rabbi, this is back in the book of Acts dealing with the thing strangled. Could you elaborate a little more on that?
Okay.
Go from there.
There is no prohibition whatsoever. There's no prohibition whatsoever for a Ben Noah to eat an animal that was strangled. There's just no such thing. For a Ben Israel, yes, because a Ben Israel is obligated to only eat things that were slaughtered according to the prescription of the Torah. But that is only a law for a Ben Israel. A Ben Noah is not under that system. He can eat something which was slaughtered. He can eat kosher food. But as a matter of fact, I gave you a case where he would not be able to eat food that would be kosher for a Ben Israel based upon the two systems, if you remember. I'm not going to go over right now. But I'm just speaking in a basic way. He can, but there is no violation for a Ben Noah to eat an animal that was strangled. The violation is to eat a limb of an animal that was removed during its lifetime. That is a prohibition. That is prohibited. And if a limb was removed during the animal's lifetime, it is forever prohibited, even after the animal dies. But if an animal was strangulated, there is just simply no prohibition whatsoever to eat the dead animal. I mean, this is just completely baseless. There's just no source for this. It's something which it was a misunderstanding. You want to know where it came from? I'll tell you where it came from. Because the people were ignorant, and they knew about ritual slaughter, and therefore they decided that a strangulated animal shouldn't be eaten because you're only allowed to eat things that are slaughtered ritually. But that's only for Ben Israel, not for Ben Noah. Okay? So that's why I say the whole chapter is just filled with complete ignorance of the subject matter, the fact, just not correct, okay? Because, as I said many times, the ones who wrote it were not really scholars. They really didn't have any understanding of the law. Okay, did I cover that one?
Charles McKim coming back with something for next week.
Okay.
I'd like for you to follow up on just kind of what you were talking about here. And that is, you give us reason to know that the that we were able to eat something strangled and you, the Ben Israel, cannot.
Right.
Then at what point do we not carry that all the way through? I mean, if we were not careful, it was like we can do all these things and
like
it's okay. Well, I mean, I don't really have any specifics, but I guess maybe this is just a specific thing of the strangle, non-strangle.
Okay.
But I guess what I'm saying is if you carry that further,
okay,
the 613 laws and those things surrounding that had to do with don't do so many of them.
Right.
Does that mean that for the Benoah it would be okay? I realize that's kind of
okay,
an open thing there. But
I know what you're asking me. You're asking a good question. Your question, let me see if I...
Okay.
I want to elaborate on a little more. Your question is that I just previously stated that the way for the Benoah is to go through the Torah beyond the seven laws and to discover the principles that are in the 613, and he should keep those philosophically, like desecration of the dead, for instance, that I mentioned before. And now your question is a good question. Your question is, well, why doesn't the Ben Noah say, well, if that's the case, then maybe it's wrong to eat an animal that was strangulated, because the Ben Israel can't, because it's one of the 613, right?
Right.
Okay. Where do I differentiate between, where do I, as a Ben Noah, partake of the 613 in order to perfect myself, and where do I not? Okay?
Right.
That I believe is your question, right?
Right.
Where do I draw the line? Sometimes I'm telling you, hey, look at the Torah. You see that? The desecration of the dead. It means you have to have respect for a human being, even his death. So I, as a Ben Noah, should keep that. Well, why shouldn't I keep the law about slaughtering also? Right? Have I got your gist?
Yes.
Okay. We will open next week with that question.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure, appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Okay.
Okay.
Hold on a minute.
Okay, sure.
What, hold on.
Yep.